Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we have Avram Anushi, and he's going to be talking about his book, From Timba to Mars. Welcome, Avram. Hi.
This is Avraham Anushi. I am delighted to be on the air again here with the host, Sherry.
Thank you. Why don't you tell the audience a bit about yourself and your background?
Basically, it's a very short story. I was born in Israel, grew up in Israel, and came to America after finished high school. I went to university here and managed to get a couple of degrees. I'm now an electronics engineer. I went to got my second degree at Harvard University, and I have then pursued a career in engineering. I became a vice president in one of the division of United Technologies, a very large corporation in the United States. And now I am I live in Pittsburgh, and I had left. I retired from United Technologies and started my own corporation in electronics in Pittsburgh. Another little bit about my private life. My first wife passed away as a after a battle with cancer, and now I'm I live in Pittsburgh with my second lovely wife, and I am very fortunate to have her.
Well, that's lovely. How did you start writing your books?
My book is about a very important contemporary issue that the United States, as a matter of fact, all the countries on the globe are concerned about. That is the fast depletion of rare earth metals, which are very critical in many products that we take for granted right now on the 21st century. Just give you a couple of examples. Without one of them, there will be no jet engines, because jet engines operate at very high temperatures, and that specific rare earth metal called rhenium has a very high melting temperature, and it can withstand the high temperature of jet engines. Without it, there will be no jet engines, there will be no turbines for power. Other rare earth elements would prevent us from having refineries, and we would have no smartphones, we would have no television, the society will go back to the 18th century standard of living. So when I read the article on this, I said, this is a fantastic idea to build a novel around it. And I said, well, if some people interpret the Big Bang of Einstein's theory saying that not all the elements of the universe wound up on Earth, and maybe some of them are still in Mars. So I decided I'll write a book about taking unmanned vehicles. I am an engineer, so unmanned vehicles that will send them to Mars and bring back the rare earth metals that are important to withstand our standard of industrialization that we have right now. So I built, use that as a core, and around this I built a novel of spying and of issues between the United States and Russia and China, and I put Israel in it. So it's a thriller based on an imaginary issue, but it's not so imaginary because it's really a problem. And my idea was triggered by a Pentagon report, which says that America is in trouble if the depletion of all these elements will continue. I guess that's a short synopsis.
Okay. Are you a big reader? I mean, I know you're an engineer, but do you do private reading that you enjoy? What kind of books do you like?
I started, why am I writing? I'm really an electronic engineer, and I used to be a vice president of a large corporation. I had no time to write. But I always dreamt I wanted to write because my father used to write. And when I was a child, my father translated about 20 books from French to Hebrew. So I grew up with Hebrew, and I first decided I'm going to write my memoir in Hebrew. And then when I came here to this country, I said, I'll translate it to English. And I wrote another one in English. But then I found out that it was wonderful for the family, but it's not good enough for the public. So then I joined a forum on the internet of authors who interchanged the chapters, and each author edits the chapter of another author. And some of those guys recognized me as not having an American background and started correcting my English and improved me to a point where I wound up writing another book, which was published in 2011. And it was called The Hidden Scroll. It's about archaeology and history, which I am very fond of. It's my passion is history and archaeology. And then more recently, I took the same character that I built in that book, and I put it in my new book, which was just published in June. And it's called From Timna to Mars. Timna is a valley in the Negev part of Israel where there is a coal mine, a copper mine that has been existing for at least 4,000 years at the time of the Egyptian before the Jews left Egypt. The coal mine becomes the copper mine becomes a very important part because I created the discovery of one of these rare earths in the copper mine, and then it developed into a story that is Timna to Mars, taking the idea for what happened in Timna and sending rockets to Mars to search for the rare earth metal that Earth needs. So these are the two books that are, and I'm now writing another historical novel which followed the previous one, which was, so I'm involved in primarily historical novels and tie them with adventure of archaeology and space missions.
I see. What kind of reading do you do in your leisure? You have a very technical mind. How do you relax?
Well, I have been thinking about what are the important things that I read that influenced me, and most of my readings are not fiction. I like history, so I read historical books. Like the most important book that it's always stays in my mind is a book that was written 2,000 years ago. It was written in Aramaic and Greek, and its English version triggered my imagination. It was written by a person known as Josephus Flavius, who was a Judean general. And when the Romans won the war, he sat down and he wrote the history of what has happened there. So it was a historical book, and now I have a book that is a complete collection of what he has written. But the books that I read are also I'm interested in space. So there's a book called the Black Hole, and another one called Secret History of Time. It has to do with the Big Bang, but so I'm interested in scientific and also in novels, and both of them influence my thinking. One of the books that fascinates me the most is Daniel Silva. He has a character which is he appears again and again in his many books. His name is Golan, and Mr. Golan appears in every one of his books, and I'm fascinated by the quality of his writing, and that influenced me to create my own character. So I have in my last two books, I have a figure which a professor that is involved is really the main protagonist, and it's also going to appear in the next book that I'm writing now.
I see. So you have like a like a Hitchcock type of appearance in your own book.
I didn't understand the question.
Alfred Hitchcock, you have like an Alfred Hitchcock-like appearance in your book where Alfred used to appear in his movies?
I missed your question.
You know who Alfred Hitchcock is, right? The director, Alfred Hitchcock? Psycho?
The director of?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but I couldn't understand what you said.
Okay. I was just saying, you said that you appeared in your book, and I was comparing it to the
I didn't say that I appeared in the book. I said that my protagonist that appeared in my last book, which is an archaeological search for an ancient skull, it's also a professor that appeared in the present in the book that was just published from Timnath to Mars, and will appear also in the third book, in the following book that I'm writing now. I didn't put myself in it. I said my protagonist appeared in three books in the series, just like Daniel Silva's protagonist, the hero, appeared in several of his books.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. I thought you were saying that you put yourself in your book. Okay. What kind of area, when you're writing, how do you find the privacy to write? I'm sure you have your own stuff going on in your own private life. When do you write? Where do you write, and where do you find the privacy to do it?
Well, I was thinking about that it's to me, where I write is not important to me, because I don't say I have to be in my study and have everything access to me around me so I can write. The location is not important. Everything that I write, I store in a flash memory, which I plug into my computer. I use a portable, and I use my home computer, my office computer, and I use anything I can, and I always carry the flash memory with me. So I can be traveling overseas, I can plug it into a friend's computer and keep writing another chapter or editing an old chapter. So the location of where I write doesn't mean anything to me. It is when I'm inspired to write, I want to be able to do it now, not 2 days from now. Because sometimes, all of a sudden, you'll get a complete block and you can't write a thing. And so I put everything away for 3 days. But when the time comes to write, I don't say, well, I'm not in my right corner, so I'm not going to write. Location is not important to me. What is important to me is the triggering ideas that come. And if they do come when I'm in China, I immediately jot it down into my flash and I have it available. So that is what's important for me when I write. I hope I answered your question.
I actually wasn't asking about the location. I was more asking about your privacy. You probably are busy with your own social life and your family. Do you write in the morning so you have privacy then, or do you write at night? That's more what I was asking.
I don't have a problem with the privacy, first of all, because I already have grandchildren. So my family is already away from me. I am alone here with my wife. So I have a house, I have a big condo, and I have a study. And when I write, I'm in my study, and my wife watches television. Whenever I find time. So I never have a problem with privacy. I think I need the opposite. When I do write, the first thing I do, I show to my chapter to my wife, to a friend, to another author. What do you think of the chapter? How does it fit of the chapter with the chapters you saw last week? So privacy to me is not an issue.
I see. Okay. Do you have a preference? Was there a book that when you were a young boy that touched you, that that really made you a reader?
I mean, what book influenced me the most, or what influenced me to write?
No, neither. When you were a child, was there a book that touched you and made you...
I don't understand your question.
When you were a little boy...
For your listener, let them know I'm a little hearing impaired, so that is why I have a problem understanding.
Okay.
Could you repeat it, please?
Sure. When you were a little boy, was there a book that touched your heart and made you become a reader?
The thing that when I was a boy, I fell in love with Jewish history, and anytime I could get a hold of a book that has to do with Jewish history, to me that was the greatest enjoyment. My mother always used to be mad at me, stop reading a book, go play with the boys. I didn't want to go outside to play football with the boys. I wanted to read more. So my passion was, what do I like most? So I remember once someone gave me, I was a little more than a boy, I was a teenager. I am fluent in French, so I grabbed the book of Les Miserables and I read it. And I was so fascinated, I think I read it three times already since then. To take the history of a revolution, and I compare that revolution to the one that there was a revolution against the Romans, and I say, gee, how are we going to compare the revolution of the Judeans against the Romans with the revolution of the people in France against the king? And I was fascinated by the story of the Miserables and how the writer Victor Hugo took a conflict of a political situation, a historical event of great importance, and made a novel out of it. He created the characters of Jean Valjean and Javert, and he built something that, to me, was so lively. I felt, gee, one day I'm going to sit down and write down something like that. So as a child, I was influenced by the fact that I read a lot, and all the other boys played football.
Okay. Yeah, I love Les Miserables too. I mean, Victor Hugo is a brilliant writer. He wrote beautifully. How do you feel about the way the books are today, that there's so many different options, e-readers and that people have independent and there's self-publishing. What do you think about how publishing is going right now?
Well, it's very fascinating. It's completely something that no one ever dreamt about 20 years ago. I can't imagine how, if you try to explain what happened today to people who lived, who were readers or writers 20 years ago, they would laugh at you. The fact that you have access to so many books by the Kindle, by a reader that is an electronic, makes it so simple for everyone to read a book for $2, for $3, which you couldn't do at that time. And it means that it's a revolution that fascinates me, because I don't know how it's going to be 20 years from now. Just to compare the two to my profession, I am an electronics engineer. When I wrote my thesis at the university, it was 2 years after the transistors were invented. And at that time, people told me, you're crazy, you're working on something that will never work. And I said, no, I think this is something new. And 20 years from now, if you now apply for university and you don't know what I did know when I wrote my thesis, they won't let you into engineering school. So it means that things leaped forward so fast in 20 years, in 10 years, that it's very hard to predict how it's going to be. But from a publishing point of view, the fact that it's available to them for the masses in such a low price is a big factor, because everyone has access. On the other hand, unfortunately, when I belong to this forum of writers, I found out there are so many people who were joining that didn't know how to write two sentences. So everybody wants to be a writer, but they have no idea what it takes to be a writer. I'd say 80% or 70% of the people who are involved in the forum were people who decide they want to write, but they don't know enough to write two sentences. So it means the system today attracted a lot of people who are wannabes. They want to be writers, but they can't make it. So they go ahead and go to daddy and say, "Big, give me money. I'm going to publish it privately, and I don't care if it's good or bad. I'll publish it." And that means that there's a lot of books out there that are really not worth very much.
That's true, but then there's also the books that self-publish, and people have been self-publishing for years. I mean, Jane Austen and Charlotte Bronte self-published because it was hard to get a woman's work in that period. But today, you're right, there's a lot of people who want to self-publish, but it's like a two-edged sword. There's really amazing writers who self-publish and start their own publishing companies and stuff. Again, particularly women, because it seems to draw a lot of women because of the self-publishing seems to be like a magnet. There was like an old boys club thing in traditional publishing for some time.
There's another issue which is close to what you're talking about. What bothers me is that the publishing companies don't know how to identify the good writers among those who want to be writers. And I know some good writers who are fantastic. They can't. Nobody wants to talk to them because you haven't published before, we don't want to talk to you. So they are losing on the potential of big writers by not searching for them. The big corporations, Random House and all the others, They don't make an effort to find the ones that have the real talent. I'm not one of them, but there are some that are very, very good, and I see what they wrote, and the industry doesn't know them. That's the puzzle that has to be addressed by the big corporation. Of course, they are driven by the purpose of making money. If it doesn't make money, they're not interested. Good or bad, they don't care. And I think that's a different. It interferes with the quality of the writing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they rather publish a book by Paris Hilton than a book by the newest, greatest American novelist. I mean, it's kind of sad.
Allow me to tell you something that I'd like. Some people might be interested. I remember. I learned my English the British way. I went to high school in Israel, and the teacher was from London, so he taught us English the British way. So my favorite story about how I was introduced to an American English in my freshman year in America. So in my high school, my English teacher was a British guy. So when I came to America as a freshman, the teacher, I remember her name, Mrs. Richardson. She assigned us homework to write an essay. I didn't know what essay was. Essay was a new word for me. In England, they call it a composition. So I wrote the essay on archaeology. And to my dismay, it was returned with three red marks of misspelled words. I was very upset. How could I misspell the word? And I submitted a composition with three mistakes. I was very upset about myself. I went home, I opened my dictionary, I checked it, and I found no mistakes. I went back to Mrs. Richardson, and I told her, I checked my dictionary. There are no mistakes in my essay. And she said, "What did you do?" I said, "I checked it against my dictionary. Show me your dictionary," she said. So I gave her my Oxford. She looked at it, and she said, "Throw this Oxford away and buy a Webster." "What's a Webster?" I asked. "Forget your British spelling. In America, we spell the Webster way." And she ended the discussion. I didn't know what to do. So I was amazed. Okay, I guess I have to go buy a Webster. I went and I bought a Webster, and I checked those words, and I found that I had three mistakes. I modified my essay and I changed color, C-O-L-O-U-R, to color, C-O-L-O-R. And there was another word, honor, H-O-N-O-U-R. I had to change it to H-O-N-O-R. However, I never threw away my Oxford. That was the day that one day I'll write a book about archaeology.
Well, I think that was kind of silly of the teacher to say to throw away the Oxford just because it was slightly different. I mean,
when I was in this forum, I found out there was an author in England. I told him this. I told her the story, and she said to me, "Oh, how horrible! The Americans ruined our language." So
I've heard that before. We don't have a lot of time left. Do you have any events or online events or public events that you like to tell the audience about?
No, I don't believe so. I don't think any public events that I have scheduled right now, but I am scheduled to appear in a couple of meetings where I was invited to lecture about my book and they asked me to buy my two books, so my last two books. So I don't have any events right now that I'd like to mention, except that I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell about myself and about the book. And I hope that it serves the purpose of your show.
Thank you. It was very enjoyable. I really enjoyed it. And I'm sure that the audience will look up your book and want to know about future books. Thank you very much for being on the show.
You're welcome. I'm delighted to have the opportunity. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Okay.